an historic day on Wall Street as the S&P 500 tops 5,000 and closes above the big psychological level for the first time ever. We also see the NASDAQ hitting a high that we haven't seen since 2021 as tech stocks continue to fuel that index. Welcome, everyone, to Buy, Hold, Sell. I am your trader, Todd Schoenberger, and I am joined by my friend and co-host, Tobin Smith, out in sunny and hot Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm assuming
it's
hot.
Do you read the newspaper? Do you follow golf? It's freezing ass out here.
Well, you know what? I got to tell you, we got a little bit of a warm spell on the East Coast right now, and I'll take it because in the middle of February, who doesn't want to see some warm weather? Spring is right around the corner, and that damn groundhog was right. But with us today, and the guy who is always right, is Reese Williams. Reese Williams has some breaking news because, well, we're going to get into that later, but he is the, chief strategist right now, Reese, right? With Wave Capital out of Haverford, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia. Welcome to the program, Reese.
Thanks very much for having me. Looking forward to it.
So there's a Y in the middle there, right? It's not just waves. It's
there's a Y. Wave, exactly. Capital. Wave.
Well, I want to hear all about the new outlet that you have right now, because I know it's exciting. It's a great story, and we're going to tell the audience all about it. But we have to talk about the S&P 500 right now, hitting the 5,000 mark and closing above this threshold. Reese, what's driving this market higher?
Tech, and more tech. It is very reminiscent of the late 90s in that regard, where it's like everything you kind of had outside of tech kind of sits there and tech is just motoring. And especially obviously the AI theme is motoring the most. So, but to me, these big stocks, that are powering this move are not overly expensive relative to their growth rate, relative to their history. You know, the S&P just made an all-time high. Some of these big stocks are not at all-time highs, Google, Amazon. So I think there's several possibilities for this to keep working, because I don't see what stops it here.
First off, I get this report that says whether a company on their earnings report talked about AI, and the stocks that companies that didn't talk about AI are net negative, and the ones who talked about AI are net positive.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a reason, and I'm sort of a little bit sick of the, well, first off, you know, all the, oh gosh, everything's overvalued. You know, historically speaking, give me a freaking break. I mean, first off, I think now 86% of the companies that have reported have beaten their expectations, number one. Number two, I think whoever was talking about this week is right, that when you have these trillions and trillions of dollars that are all in essentially algorithmic and or market cap weighted stuff, it's a, you know, virtual positive signal. It goes up in value. The value stocks go down in value. So they automatically sell the value, whatever the freak that means today. And the earnings power companies go up in value. Now, we're going to have probably the February correction, Todd. You know, every year, particularly when you've had like this 15 out of 16 weeks up, traditionally, and in a presidential year specifically, market's down about 8%. In February, simply to catch its breath, for people to take profits, et cetera. But the overall issue, I'm just looking at the numbers I got from the Electronics Association. $180 billion, the hyperscalers, the Microsofts, the Facebooks, you know, Metas, et cetera, are going to spend in 2024 just on, you know, AI, what we call the technology stack of AI.
Yeah.
In 2025, they're set to do $140 billion. So let me see. Okay, that's $320 billion in capital. And that's just the top five companies. I'm not talking about the rest. So it should be leading the market, Todd, because it is leading the earnings growth. They sell these services at very high margins. The NVIDIA margin keeps getting higher, by the way, and the price keeps getting lower on a PE basis.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. And if you're in a crummy old business, it makes sense that your crummy old business is valued like a crummy old business. I'm just sick and tired of the, you know, I'm a value investor. I've been a value investor since 1945. And I haven't made a freaking dime for my customers in 10 years. It's not fair.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Well,
Reese, how about that, though? Because if you take a look at this market, Toby's right. I mean, it's just we are due for a slight correction. It's probably going to be healthy. However, is that the theme of this current market right now? Is that it's so inflated that only a little thing. NVIDIA comes out with earnings next week. What if the number's bad? I mean, is that going to send the markets in a tailspin? Or do you think it would just be a great buying opportunity?
Well, if the number is bad, yes, I think the market will go down. But I think there's no risk that the number is bad. The question is, how good is it? And is it above the whisper number? That's harder to pick. But, you know, there's clearly just so much, as Toby pointed out, there's so much momentum behind AI spend. I mean, every one of these hyperscalers dramatically increased their 2024 CapEx guidance all to spend on this, right? So there's a reason why NVIDIA and Supermicro have been going up every day is, you know, there's not that many ways to play it publicly. And some of the bigger AI companies are private now. I'm sure that will change over the next year or so because Wall Street would like to do some IPOs again. But, you know, there's some of the Databricks, Anthropic, OpenAI, the biggest one, I'm sure. I mean, I can't imagine what a feeding frenzy that's going to be on the IPO market when that happens. So I think all these things are happening. And so therefore, could there be a correction? Sure. But I still think you want to buy the correction. It feels to me like it's the third or fourth inning, maybe the second or third inning. And it's not going to be over until NVIDIA is at 100 times earnings like Cisco was in 1999. NVIDIA of this decade reminds me of Cisco of the 90s, right?
Yeah.
You had to have, you had to get a router, you had to network your company, you were moving jobs over to India and China. And, you know, all that was possible because of Cisco and Intel. And it really wasn't possible before that. And it created this big virtuous circle of margin expansion. And that's exactly what's happening again. Sorry, Toby.
Yeah, Reese. No, I've had deja vu all over again, as Yogi would say. Many times but it's so different. You know, AOL, God bless, and I've known Steve Case for a million years, but it really wasn't worth 250 times its earnings.
Right.
Yahoo, for crying out loud, Mark Cuban, smartest guy in the world. He gets his little broadcast FM acquired for $2 billion. And then Goldman Sachs sells him a contract that guarantees the $2 billion. All the other Yahoo people lost their ass. Mark Cuban bought a, you know, basketball team's having a good life. But that insanity is not here.
Not yet.
And the sanity is, again, go back to the thing. What are you on the call? Well, so what's your AI strategy, sir, at XYZ company? You know, we're just trying to figure it out. Boom. Or what's your AI strategy? Well, we have four different departments working on it. We've already cut our costs about 13% in customer service and 15% over here. And we're just getting going. Stock goes up. I mean, when you get a regime change in the tech stack, we now, it's, you know, you were talking about Cisco. That was the internet stack, right? Now, we were early investors in SMC. I've only said that 500 times, Reese. But the reason was that in our research group, everybody understood that who was the biggest buyer of NVIDIA chips, it's SMCI. By the way, when you go to their manufacturing plant, as I did in Fremont a few months ago, there's 8 semis offloading NVIDIA chips to them. I mean, the way of man, we own a Celestica, CSL, because they're also a manufacturer of these containers, and they're a second place. Because what we also learned when I went on that trip is, guess what? We can't deliver all the stuff we've sold. And there's waiting times. And so you go to Celestica or look at Sanmina this week. Sanmina also manufactures the containers for the data centers. Sanmina popped, 20, 30%. Cloudflare goes up 40% because all the AI work can't be done on the data center. It's got to be done partly on the edge, right, on these POPs around the world. I mean, the whole infrastructure is going to give almost $1 trillion of global spending for all high profit margin products. So let's not, kid ourselves about why the market's going up, because this is a once in a lifetime transition. Again, I hate the word transition.
It does, It does seem that way. And Reese, you know, I'm sure you, along with all other Wall Streeters, were watching 60 Minutes and you saw Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell's interview. And that was the topic of conversation earlier in the week. But I got to say, over the last 24 hours, nobody's talking about it. It's just all about tech and the S&P really hitting that threshold of 5,000. What are your thoughts? Is the Fed right now, Fed rate cuts? Yeah, they might be off the table, but doesn't it seem irrelevant?
Yeah, I think the market has now accepted that the Fed's not going to cut until June. So I think if we're still talking about the Fed's cutting in December, maybe that's a problem. But I think the market's fine. March, April, May, June, anywhere around there. You saw the CPI was revised lower, and I think it's going to get actually even better in the first quarter because the apartment rents are actually going down year over year, and it's still listed as like up 5 or 6 in the CPI calculation. So that yeah, and that's 25% of the CPI calculation, by the way, is rent. So you're almost baked in the cake that CPI trends down in the first quarter here, almost no matter what happens with the other inputs. So
Well, great point.
I think there's going to be some good news on that front. And the Fed, though, is going to probably be a little conservative and cut. And certainly, if the stock market's going up, why there's no pressure to cut.
Yeah, the other one of the sort of chap my hide has been this. Well, you know, historically, when we have an inverted yield curve, we always have a recession. And again, I sort of say, yeah, but that was like 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago. How does that at all apply? Where, because in those times we had 6% unemployment, 7% unemployment. We had more people than jobs, and we continue to have many more jobs than we have people able to take them. We have the journal had a great one about how, you know, 65 is essentially the new 55. Everybody's saying, I got enough money. Why am I working? Well, I'm 65 and I work because what else would I do? But you know, our economy is so different. And for people to use old metrics as if nothing's changed in the last 10, 20 years, to me, is just insane. And then on top of the insanity is was the 5 interest rate cuts. Really? I mean,
Wasn't
the
it
circular,
six? I
six,
think you're
the
right.
circular logic, right? The only way they do it is if the economy went into crapper. The economy's not going into crapper because we got more jobs than people can take them. And oh, by the way, wages are up. And to your point, the craziness of rents that came in from the pandemic, I think people again forget. Remember, we had that pandemic, stuff sort of got effed up. Now in air like Arizona here, my friends in the apartment business, their rents are down 14% year over year. When that goes into the CPI, and then you take the housing prices, I mean, I'm shocked that the houses in Beverly Hills, they're down from 100 million down to 85 million, Todd. I mean, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But that's 42% if you take owner's equivalent rent plus lease. So Reese is dead right. We have inflation that is tactically and structurally coming down. And
Right.
Jaybo said, we're going to not rush this. And they shouldn't rush it. I think that was the message to try to tell the knuckleheads that the 6 rate cuts, you're smoking some great weed. And I'd like to have some of that great weed, but I'm not now. And I look at this as reality is coming, and then add in the AI revolution around the world, and I think the market's doing exactly what it should be doing, and it
Yeah.
has nothing to do with 1999 with 800 PEs and you know no earnings, blah 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 blah. It's just not nothing is analogous other than the fact that yeah, there's a mania, but this mania is making money, and
But
the other one was not.
what I don't understand though, Toby, and this also goes for you, Reese, is that you have, and you're right, Toby, when you talk about when you look at historical data and some of the things that we were focused on 20 years ago, how that does not pertain to this current market environment. But the question that I have that nobody can answer is why does the Fed even need to cut rates? The economy is thriving, economy's booming, jobs are being made, even wages are going higher. Isn't the whole point of cutting interest rates a really the really moment that you need when the market is and the economy is going south?
Yeah,
Because it's not
Reese,
happening.
take that one.
I get the easy ones, huh? The you know, I remember 1999. The you know, everybody wanted tech stocks that had no earnings and you know eyeballs, and the 10-year had a 7% yield, as I recall in 1999, and that didn't seem to upset anybody. So I don't think there's anything dramatically. I mean, other than over the last 15 years, rates have been super, super low. So these rates seem very, very high right now. But historically speaking, current rates are not high. So yeah, I mean, think everybody will get used to it over time.
The last 50 years, the average 10-year was 4.1%. It's been for a long time. Obviously, going into the financial crisis and then, you know, pandemic, so on and so forth, that we all were, you know, snorting the good stuff, and free money was free money, which made risk-taking a lot less risky. But to normalize, I guess to your point, Todd, 4% is normal, and the economy, to your point, is doing well at 5.5% Fed funds rates.
Yeah.
But oh, by the way, we happen to be big investors in these collateralized loan obligations, the closed-end funds, et cetera, that make loans to private companies. Their rates are higher than, you know, the 10-year. Companies are paying them quite well, unless they're in a commercial office space business, but woe is me. We have higher profitability in these industries. They can handle higher debt, blah, blah, blah. So to get jiggy that whether we're at 5% for a while, when 4% has been historical, and then that somehow we were going to go cut to 2%, that would be the abnormal. And that's I think what Reese is saying, and what you're saying, I just... it would be abnormal. And then we would have the issues of more inflation, so on and so forth. And I'll just end with this one, though. I've known Jay for a long time, and he was a history major in college, not at your beautiful school, Reese, but one of those other, I think he went to Harvard. And he's a sensitive human being thing. And what really gets him is the 50% of the population that is only earning about 20% of the income and has about 15% of discretionary income. Inflation affects those houses terribly, those households. And he sees it in his heart and his duty to get inflation down. And if I have to hold the rates higher for longer to make sure that people don't go and, you know, buy a dozen eggs and they're $5 now when they were $2, you know, three years ago. That's an important part to Jay Powell, in my opinion, my experience with him.
Well, you've seen that in the stock market too. I mean, the stocks that have something to do with that lower third of the income distribution curve are not doing very well, and they're all complaining about it on the conference call. Even McDonald's, which overall is doing well, said that, you know, the lower third isn't there right now.
Yeah.
I don't really go to McDonald's occasionally. It's nowhere else to go. I was pretty shocked that my McDonald's Egg McMuffin sausage thing was like $5.50.
That's crazy.
I remember that when they were like, you know, $2.25 and you got a side of fries for free. And that's not long ago. So, yeah, I would absolutely. You're feeding a family of four and it's, you know, $30 cash money.
You know, would think everything was supersized. Yeah, that's right.
They're paying a lot more for labor than they used to.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, yeah. I don't think franchisees are making huge money. The corporation does because they only care about a percentage of revenues. But I think the franchisees are doing less well now than they did prior to COVID in general in most
absolutely, including the ones in California with the $21 an hour rate.
That's especially hard, yes.
That's unbelievable. That's incredible. I tell you, people are riding around Range Rovers working at McDonald's. All right, well, listen, guys, we're gonna leave it there on that block because coming up in the next block, we're going to get into some sectors, some favorite stocks, and we also have to hear about the big news from Reese about his big career move. You will not believe what he's going to tell us.
He's making waves, ladies and gentlemen. He's making waves.
He is making waves. That's absolutely true. So with us today is Reese Williams. He is the chief strategist over at Wave Capital, and you're watching Buy Hold Sell. We'll be right back after the break. Please stay with us.
Buy, hold, sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
Get ready for a revolution in business podcasting with the Weekly Money Clip. This game-changing podcast is brought to you by CrossCheck Media and CenterClip, and it's set to redefine how you think about money. Featuring a countdown of top business audio segments Each episode is packed with authentic and original commentary from over 50 independent contributors. Join us for a comprehensive exploration of money-related topics where expert insights meet individual experiences in a 30-minute powerhouse of financial wisdom. Available on the Evergreen Podcast Network and all popular podcast platforms, the Weekly Money Clip is easily accessible to anyone interested in business and finance discussion. Don't miss out on this fusion of creativity, expertise, and innovation. Subscribe now and be part of the financial revolution with the Weekly Money Clip. Your financial future starts here.
Hey, this is Jeff Hurst, editor-in-chief of the Stock Traders Almanac. You got to listen to Todd and Toby on Buy, Hold, Sell.
Welcome back to Buy, Hold, Sell. Well, today was a historic day on Wall Street with the S&P 500 closing above the threshold of 5,000. We also see the NASDAQ hitting its highest high since 2021. It's unbelievable. Everybody's popping champagne and everybody's making power moves. And one of those individuals is with us today, Reese Williams. He is the chief strategist over at Wave Capital in Haverford, Pennsylvania. Reese, I got to say, you got to get into this because you were with a very reputable firm with Spouting Rock, and I know the people at Spouting Rock very well. I got to, and you're now stepping up even higher with a great story. Tell us all about it.
So Wave Capital was started a couple of months ago, and it's three African-American gentlemen all in their 30s. And myself, and the genesis of this company was really a couple of years ago, where I met a gentleman named Abraham Cremat at a Duke event. He was a all ACC linebacker at Duke, and then played for the Redskins for a nanosecond, but really played for the CFL for about 3 years, and then went on to be a CBRE industrial real estate broker, where he was a major player in the Mid-Atlantic. And I actually own Prologis, which is the leading industrial REIT. And so we just got to talking, and because obviously he had real-time information. And for quite a while, people have been thinking the industrial REITs are about to roll over and rents are, you know, it's too extended and you should diversify into office, which of course has been a tragic mistake. But yeah. Anyway, the long story short, he just became a source. We started talking back and forth. And then, I don't know, somewhere in the last year or so, we kind of talked seriously about starting a firm. Because, you know, this is a really great story. He's a first generation college student with this background. And then he happened to have his best friend from Duke, who was an Alston Bird attorney and also has done a lot of private equity deals with another gentleman. That gentleman's name is Glenn Williams. He's the Baltimore native. And I think you guys would get along great. And then Jerron Smith. Jerron Davis is our leading our PE effort, and he came out of the Black Entertainment Network, Robert L. Johnson's firm. And he was Forbes 30 under 30.
Cool.
So he's got a tremendous resume, and he has actually worked with Glenn on these PE deals together. Both and Glenn's both a lawyer and an operator. They've changed out ERP systems. They've changed out management. And so our strategy on the PE side is kind of interesting because Jerron led the owner operator group at Robert L. Johnson's firm. Uh-huh. So he knows all these owner operators. So we don't have to do auctions. We don't have to do club deals. And we're much smaller in terms of the kind of the market we're going after. We're going after that 5 to 15 million in EBITDA company. That, frankly, is not an area that Blackstone or KKR or Carlyle can care about because it's just too small to move the needle.
It's not going to move the needle.
Yeah. So we're playing it in a sandbox where we can still buy it 5 times, which, by the way, that's what KKR started out at 30 years ago. They bought it 5 times. They improved it. They sold it at 9 or 10 times. And that's going to be our business model. Nowadays, these bigger guys, and that no offense to them because they've obviously been tremendous companies, but they're buying it 11 to 14 times and kind of hoping for the best. So I think we have a real leg up and that we can play in a much smaller sandbox.
Yeah, you can get rich picking up crumbs. I mean, that's for sure. So that's a great outlook.
We don't look at them as crumbs. We just look at them as smaller companies where there's not quite the feeding frenzy. We want to buy, good companies and as Jaron. Jaron would be a better spokesman than myself, but he has this what you would call a bond and a call strategy. He wants most of the business to be very predictable, maybe not super high growth, but then a call option on, you know, something that's AI or whatever, yeah. Just something that has some sizzle that can grow really fast. So we can get some, we have some downside protection, but also some upside potential. So that,
well,
that's
you're starting at the right time. You know, we've gone through the bust, we've come back up. And again, as you say, as interest rates come down to a normal level, you can, you know, borrow money at a reasonable rate, and the returns in your space are pretty outstanding. So congrats. All right, Todd, let's talk about stocks, damn it.
All right. Well, let's again, with that, though, what is Wave? I mean, you have these great minds, these brilliant minds working at this firm. You guys aren't just talking about shop and how to grow this business. You got to be talking about the markets. Give us some ideas. Give us something other than tech that you think that you have your eye on right now that investors should consider for this year.
Okay, well, I kind of agree with you and Toby that tech is going to be the leadership. So with that caveat, I do think an area which is underloved right now and a good diversification would be energy stocks. I think it's been and obviously it was a bad performer last year, not so great this year, but in general, some pretty good dividend protection. And there's a lot that, you know, the market is ignoring right now about the Middle East that could get, you know, significantly worse, because neither Israel or Hamas has a lot of incentive to take a deal that the other will accept. And given that, we think that conflict is going to keep going. And as long as that keeps going, the chance of something going wrong from a non-state actor just increases. The Houthis live for, live to get their name in the paper and to stand up and to be tough. And we don't think that anything Biden does, even if Biden did a lot worse to the Houthis, they'd keep fighting. So it's really, there's no really short-term answer. And so as long as this thing keeps percolating, we think there is that risk that energy, you know, gets really on fire, and potentially, you know, you could have a $90 or $100 barrel of oil if anything goes spectacularly wrong in the Middle East.
Okay, I would not use that metaphor for oil that it's on fire, but I know what you're saying. How about you know, in the United States, our oil production is down because the larger companies are buying stock back. They're paying dividends, where before it was drill, baby, drill, and now it's pay dividends, baby, pay dividends, and buy your stock back, blah blah blah. So I'm with you there. The ones that are multi. Variant though, that have natural gas, you know, they have a lot of problems. And so I'm looking at energy. I'm looking at energy that's much more oily, and then looking at what's happening in Brazil, what's happening in Ecuador, et cetera, for those big offshore, the new developments that are crushing it. And also, by the way, Saudi Arabia just said, "Screw you, Schlumberger, and the other guys doing work over here. We're going to quit our drilling program." So,
yeah. They didn't say they were going to quit. They just weren't going to start a new one in 3 years.
Yeah,
so it doesn't really affect the next couple of years. But that's good. Everybody's a little cautious about oil and the end of oil. And, you know, I think these stocks will work as long as people think there's an end of oil coming in the nearest future, because it just it doesn't stimulate a lot of drilling and a lot of speculative drilling. And, you know, another Duke guy was my fraternity brother named like Aubrey McClendon. And
Audrey.
So I remember the drill baby drill guys. So,
yeah, well, I would add this one quickly for you. You said Aubrey, and I immediately thought of natural gas. I forgot. Oh, I know. I was going to say this. So there's an MLP fund. It's called AMZA, AMZA. And it was started by a good friend of mine, like in 2014, right? What a great time to, you know.
Oof.
So they bought all these MLPs. They had redemptions like crazy. Anyway, the share price is about $28. We're in it for like a negative $5 because we bought it at $5. And then we've taken a $2.05 distribution. I mean, crazy, crazy. But they will not pay taxes if you're a shareholder in it. It's an MLP. But you're not going to pay taxes until the stock gets to $70 because of the loss carry forward.
Oh, so it's
a nice, you know, 11-12% yield, tax free. So if you're living in California or New York or some of those others, Connecticut, beats working.
Wow. Yeah. We've owned a little of the AMLP. I'm going to have to take a look at that. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah.
So on the thought back to what you were saying in the Middle East, are you suggesting that if something happens where, say, an oil field is bombed, a Scud missile goes into it, that's going to push oil higher? I mean, that you're seeing that as the risk?
Yeah, or Iran gets gets involved in a significant way, there's a lot of oil in Iran. I think that proxy war, maybe Israel fires a missile at Iran. I mean, Israel doesn't like the fact that they might be a nuclear power soon. So they might take this opportunity to settle that score while, everybody's busy. There's just lots of things that can go wrong as long as there's a very hot war going on in Gaza, which is currently happening.
So the longer it goes, then the risk premium gets quite really more substantial, especially when you're talking about the price per barrel, which therefore could translate into higher royalties anyway for the oil.
Yeah, but also remember, the tanker rates are up about 40% over the last 3 months. So for you to ship that million barrels of Brent or WTI, it now costs more. So therefore, there used to be this arbitrage where you could buy it cheap and go sell it with a lot more money because the tanker rates were so low. The transportation costs are now high enough that, for instance, in some parts to China and Japan, we're big into the liquid LPG propane distributors. But in China, the price has gotten so high because of the delivery on the shipping that they're starting to cut back. So that's another aspect of what I think Reese is talking about, is that it's landed costs, and it's the landed costs that as you get higher rate, you have no other chance but to raise rates.
Exactly. Makes a lot of sense then. All right, let's switch topics here. We have the Super Bowl coming up. Toby, you sent me some amazing statistics earlier today talking about whether the AFC team, the Chiefs, if they win, or the NFC team, the 49ers, if they win. Which team should Wall Street be rooting for?
Well, you're rooting for the 49ers. The last five times the 49ers have won, and of course, remember, they were sort of doing well in those 80s, early 90s. The market was up 20%, like 19.8% the next year. If the 49ers won, it wasn't the NFC or the AFC. The other, bromide has always been if the AFC wins, the market goes up like 8-9%. But the 49ers, so since I think the market's going to be up 20-25% overall next year anyway, I'm rooting for the 49ers, but I'm betting on the Chiefs.
So. Reese, do you have an opinion on the Super Bowl?
I like Andy Reid, so I'm gonna root for the Chiefs too. And Taylor Swift's okay as well. So,
oh, there you go, a Swift. That's awesome.
I can't name any of her songs, but she's great to me.
Conspiracy, right? Isn't there a conspiracy, Todd, with the MAGA folks?
Chris, there's a conspiracy on everything. If nobody gets their way, there's a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy if you lose a presidential election as well. So who knows? Yeah. All right, finally here, Reese, can you talk about with the election this year, how that can impact stocks? Because we had Sam Stovall on, we had Jeffrey Hirsch. Everybody has said because this is an election year, when the incumbent is running, markets always rally. But what happens now after the latest revelation on Joe Biden? What happens if Biden steps away? Will that have a negative impact on the markets?
That's a very interesting question. But I would say almost everything in Washington that could go wrong has gone wrong recently. And the markets don't seem to care. Yeah. So I think you can overly sweat what's going on in Washington. I mean, clearly there's complete dysfunction in Congress, right? They can't even they put together a bill that everybody agreed to, and then they decided at the last minute, because Trump didn't like it, that wasn't going to happen. I mean, and everybody walks away. And you still have, clearly a border issue that everybody seems to agree that there's a big issue and nobody can do anything about it. And yet the market doesn't care. So I just think you can, as long as Washington doesn't do anything completely crazy to the economy or to the stock market, the people will look through it. To your question about Biden and whether there's a replacement, there's certainly no sign that he's going to back down. You would have thought he could have gone out like a hero a couple of months ago, a Democratic hero. He beat Trump and he's going to pass it on to the next generation. But for whatever reason, he's decided he's not going to do that. So I don't know why, especially now that the special prosecutor said he was, you know, losing it, that he's going to decide today to step away. I can't see why he would do that.
Yeah, I was interested, Todd, in the a couple of research groups are doing the research on one of the things that surprised about the U.S. economy is because we have so many immigrants that have come in that are mostly all working, that there's a level of income and spending that we haven't had. And if you take it over the last 2 years, that's like 6 million people out of a country of 335 million, at the margin. That they're getting paid in cash mostly, and they're spending that cash, and they're spending it in areas that are not, you know, necessarily urban, suburban areas, which helps other parts. So I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but a side effect of all these 6,000 people a day. By the way, on 60 Minutes, they had an incredible story this last weekend about how this guy has this land near Tijuana, and people there's YouTubes that tell them how to get there so they can step over this guy's land.
Yeah,
6,000 a week.
Yeah,
I mean, and we can't stop that. All the three of us could go freaking stop that if, you know, we actually wanted to.
But it, to your point, it's great for America. It's the reason why we're not China and we're not Europe. We have immigrants and they do jobs that by and large Americans don't want. So to me, it's like the greatest story ever told. Immigration. But it's a political non-starter, both with Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's a risk for after the election, because certainly if Trump gets elected, there's going to be a hammer down on all kinds of immigration. I bet you both legal and illegal. And that has some longer term implications for the U.S. economy. So
that's way down the road. Come on.
It's way down the road. It's not this year. It's not. Look, it's just something to think about.
It's good to plant that seed, though.
Yeah. But the S&P 500 was 1,000 on February 2nd, 1998. It's 5,000 today. I'm not really good at math, but it seems like that in 26 years, it went from 1,000 to 5,000. That is the story of America, capitalism, technology, you know, and I'm a, you know, all those years on Fox News, believe it or not, I'm totally politically agnostic. Thankfully, on the shows that we never got into that stuff. But man, I can't solve that problem, but I can help people make money on it. I help people, you know, retire better. That's all I can do on it. But don't ever, you know, who said it recently? Don't ever bet against America. It is not a good bet. By the way, Germany's going to be about negative 5% this year. Italy's going to be negative 4%. The Americans, they know how to make this money.
Yeah. Toby is announcing his candidacy for U.S. Senate. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
That's another breaking news story.
My skeletons have skeletons, Todd, okay? It's not going to work.
Do you think that matters anymore?
Yeah.
Right.
There's nothing you could do that has ever done that would surprise anybody anymore.
I have never beaten a dog or hurt a cat. That's about it. That's everything else probably is a fair shot.
I love it. I think that's great. Well, listen, I know, Toby, you've been rocking it as well with your performance, and that's for goes. I mean, you're an expert's expert, along with Reese Williams. So we definitely have to get into those numbers later on. And I know we will definitely on your new show, Money Mavericks, which is going to be launching in the next couple of weeks. We are so excited about this show. It is cutting edge. Everybody's on the edge of their seats waiting for this show to come out, and it's going to be fascinating. I can't wait to watch, as well as so many others. So
I wish I lived in your private Idaho, Todd. I really do. I think that's awesome.
There you go. Reese, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on Buy, Hold, Sell. We're so happy to hear about the power move you have with your career and can't wait to hear more about it.
Excited.
I know we're going to have a description for everybody as well.
Can I just add one more division that we didn't get a chance to talk about? We have a really good business, which is focused on influencers and athletes. Obviously, two of the principals of our firm are former athletes, and they have a good Rolodex of fellas in their you know, late 20s, early 30s.
Sure.
But we can help people with some of their financial matters, and a lot of these people are kind of new to money and I pick are underserved, because in general, you know, Wall Street is guys like us and clients like us. And this is like a whole new world of people with new money that not necessarily know a lot about how to manage it. So we're going to try to help that as well.
I love that. I think that's wonderful. And Toby and I will be at the Emmy Awards next year. So maybe we can get you some more prospects. That would be great. So on that entertainment side. Reese, thank you so much for joining us today on Buy, Hold, Sell. I just can't wait to get you back on and can't wait to hear more about it.
Thank you so much.
And on behalf of Reese Williams and Tobin Smith and the rest of the crew, we'd like to thank all of you for joining us today on Buy, Hold, Sell. Can't wait to talk about it next week. We have Danielle Shea. She's going to break down the NVIDIA numbers for us on the technical side. You definitely don't want to miss that because she's got some great things to say for everyone. So have a great weekend and enjoy the Super Bowl. Take care.
Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding, or seeking. Feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.